This is the Phil Hendry Show, 1-800-449-8686.
Should we boycott French products? Is it effective? Is it something that is fair? Is it fair to French business people? Is it fair to American business people? We've been discussing this all week long with Larry Grover, the former chairman of the Conservatives of Kern County. He joins us from Culver City, California, to talk about the prospects of a French product boycott as the result of their lack of support for our war on terror. Larry, thank you for joining us again.
It's always my pleasure, Phil. It's great to be on the program with you.
The French have promised to use their veto power in the Security Council.
I've seen that.
What do we do?
Well, one thing we don't need are unimaginative boycotts, Phil, and I discussed this earlier with you. But let me tell you something that we have organized. Jack Gandolf and Bill Munson, who are two members, ancillary members of our steering committee, have done some great work on the Internet. If I may, Phil?
Go ahead.
The French, traditionally, are very proud of the fact that they invented the modern sexuality, modern lovemaking. The French, we think of lovemaking and sex when we think of the French, and I suppose that's one area where they have contributed. I am not happy with the fact that they have ownership, but I've tried to accept it. But it's always bothered me when, for instance, I was married to Kathy, and I'm trying to be as delicate as I can, but when we made love, it was always there in the back of my mind that you're basically doing something that the French refined and invented, or invented and refined, is had to get the cart before the horse. And it bothered me. It created problems between Kathy and me, and I spoke with my internist about it, a doctor of mine about it.
Was it affecting your function with your wife?
Yes, it was. Nonetheless, it was there, and it was a fact. But I've decided to turn a disadvantage into an advantage. The fact that the French invented sex as we know it can be turned into an advantage for us. And that's something that we have been planning in the planning stages for 3 months on. And that's for every American man and woman to abstain from sexual contact until the French come around on this thing and vote our way in the Security Council sends a very effective message to the French nation that the American people are not slaves to sexual contact and that we will not engage in something that the French have ownership of, even if it means not having physical contact with the people that we love. Because every time you have sex in the United States, there's a Frenchman who is saying in that French way, ooh la la, you know, vive la amour, and all of that.
Well, what will that do? What effect would that have on the French?
Well, it'll show the French that just because they invented sex...
And when you say invented sex, what you mean is they've invented romance and sex.
They invented the modern romantic aspect of sex, yeah. The French invented romance is basically what I'm saying.
All right, how will that hurt them if we abstain from sex here in America?
It will show the French that just because they invented sex, we don't have to be brainwashed into doing it, and as such, we'll show them how much contempt we have for them. In a very effective way. It's a gamble, but one that pays huge dividends, because the French will be stunned that we have taken the one thing they have credit for and we have rejected it, and they'll be knocked back on their heels. We will reject sexual contact between American men and women, as well as our gay friends rejecting sexual contact as well. And I think, Phil, the French, when they see that we are standing there and saying, you know something, we're not going to have sex with each other because you people think you invented sex and love until you come around to this vote of the United Nations.
Larry Grover joins us from Conservatives of Kern County. An unusual boycott proposed that American men, women, and everybody abstain from sexual contact to show the French that we're not going to do what they invented, which is romance.
Correct.
Can you articulate what you mean when you say the French have invented modern lovemaking and sex?
Can I articulate? Well, let's start with this, Phil. French kiss, French stockings.
Okay.
French maid outfits, French ticklers. The phrase, voulez-vous coucher avec moi ce soir? Bonbons, chocolates, the quiche pie, all of these translate into a sensual and sexual French influence. And I'll tell you, we can get over 100 million adults to refrain from sex or sexual contact. I think it'd be a proud moment for America, and it would throw the French for a loop, and it would be the boldest statement for patriotism we've yet to make.
1-800-449-8686. should we abstain from sex as a way of showing our displeasure with the French, since they invented romance and, for the most part, the modern view of sex? 1-800-449-8686, 1-800-449-8686. I'm talking to Larry Grover.
So we, if I could interrupt.
Go ahead.
We have deemed it anti-American to have sex until the French join in on this war in Iraq. So I can tell you, you can have sex, but every time you have sex, think of the American GI, think of the American airman, think of the American Marine who will lose his life as the result of you pampering the French and allowing the Iraqis to drag this out to the point where we've got American men in harm's way. So go ahead and have at it. But every time you, you know, we like to say, every time you get busy, a man dies.
All right, 1-800-449-8686. Can I ask a question right now, Larry?
Yeah.
What does voulez-vous...
It's voulez-vous coucher avec moi ce soir. It's a French saying, and it's about some kind of a sex act, which is degenerate to some degree.
When you say degenerate, what do you mean? That was a song by...
It was a song originally by Lady Marmalade, and then, of course, it was redone at the Grammys a year and a half ago by Pink, Maya, Christina Aguilera, and I think it was Lil' Kim. The phrase voulez-vous coucher avec moi ce soir is a French phrase indicating a degenerate sexual act, and it is an illegal sexual act in the United States.
What, are we talking about sodomy?
I don't want to be specific, but it is a request to engage in that kind of act, and they are talking to a prostitute. It could be a male prostitute, it could be a female, it could be man on man, woman on woman, man on woman. I don't know.
All right, 1-800-449-8686. All right, so that's what that means. It's a French phrase.
Phil, my wife Kathy, I can tell you this because I'm so much better today as a human being. My wife Kathy, and I think back on how insecure I was, she had complaints about our sexual life together, and the reason for that was she had spent a summer in Paris before we got married studying at the Sorbonne as a student.
The Sorbonne is a university in Paris.
Yes. And apparently she met some guy, some French guy, who introduced her to the way that the French do it. And it was tough, but I don't think I ever had a prouder day. When the day came that I refused to let her get on top of me, which was something she'd learned from this French guy, and I remember her trying to mount me, and I said, no, no. No, you don't, Kathy. I love my country. And she knew she was dealing with a real man, and a real American, and that's the point. I love Kathy, but the French need to be held to account.
And all right, so you and your wife are separated.
My wife and I have been separated for 4 years, but when she tried to assume a sexual position, which was strictly a French, obviously French invention.
I don't want to get into graphic sexual positions here, but are you telling me that a woman on top of a man is French?
It is. Many of these things are French-influenced. Many of these things are French-generated. The matrix and the promulgation of many of the sexual, quote, positions, end quote, are French.
All right, so she got on top and...
I told her, I said, you get on top of me, and you are beginning to get very close to a desecration of the American flag.
1-800-449-8686, 1-800-449-8686. Brian, go ahead. You're on the Phil Henry Show.
Good afternoon. How are
yes,
you?
Sir.
Look, this guy's talking. Is he on the... can he hear me now?
I can hear you.
Oh, great. Okay, you're talking about boycotting sex. Now, I can understand if you boycott the champagne and the chocolate and their stinky-ass cheese they got. I mean, they can see when you boycott this. How are they going to know if you're boycotting
sex? Because we tell them, because we publicize, because we let it be known that
okay,
the one thing they think they're so proud of, inventing romance and sex, is not engaged in by the American people. They will absolutely be stunned. I think they expect a boycott of wine and cheese. But they will never suspect that we would have the guts to take sex and throw it right back in their face. And speaking of smelling like cheese.
Okay, look, my turn. I think you have some issues. Who I mean, I can stand here and tell you I'm not having sex, but hey, I could be nailing everybody except for, you know, my neighbor's wife and the dog.
If you want to lie, then, you know, look at, you know, when you take an oath and you get up on the stand and you say I'll tell the truth, you could lie there too. But the oath that you take between yourself and God is an oath that you take between yourself and God.
Okay, and you know what? That is like the dumbest thing I've ever heard in my entire 35 years on this earth.
What is? What is?
Your idea of boycotting sex?
I'm going to boycott sex? Let me clue you in on something, Brian. In about 9 months, we'll know who was lying about not having sex. Am I right or am I wrong?
Well, I don't know. My old lady, you know, she's been fixed. I took her and had her spayed, so it's not like she's,
well,
you know, anybody's going to be able to prove anything anyway.
All right. Thanks very much, Brian. But, you know, forgive me. Are you straight?
All right. Not necessary, all right?
I'm just asking.
No, I'm extremely straight.
All right.
Are you looking for a date?
No, but you have a vocal manner that is reminiscent, and forgive me.
No, I think you're trying to project here. I think you're trying to project. Actually, I think it's you. You're tired of it hurting when you sit down, so you're trying to get everybody to boycott.
Well, you can be as
catch a break.
You could be very funny, but you could be as un-American as you want. That's
I am not un-American. I
you
am extremely
kill,
American.
You want to kill the
president? I am a conservative Republican.
You
want to
kill?
I am not an idiot.
Do you want to kill GIs? Is that what you want to do?
I don't see how having sex is going to kill our guys.
Every time you have sex, you let the French, already cowards, hide a little bit further and a little bit further from the brutal truth of what needs to be done in this world, and you kill a GI.
Okay.
So I hope you have fun when you're looking down and you're putting an ashtray on your wife's back. And
okay, I don't need the graphic, please.
I'm sorry, Phil.
Okay, look.
All right.
Take your aluminum foil hat off and tune in with the rest of the world, dude.
All right.
You're paranoid and ignorant.
If you commit the act of sexual penetration, you might as well fly another plane into a building. And what I'm trying to get you to see is, as long as we are kowtowing to these French and their cowardly ways, we're never going to affect the changes that we want in the Middle East.
All right, listen.
I see the point you're trying to make. The point I'm trying to make is you need to be medicated and put into a room with nothing sharper than a pillow.
If you disagree with me, why don't you come out and say it?
I disagree with you. That's stupid.
Because I don't know what you're getting at.
What am I getting at?
All right, listen, Brian, your car phone's breaking up, and I think you made some great points. We've got to take a break. 1-800-449-8686. 1-800-449-8686. As we continue to discuss the boycott of French products, Larry Grover, a former chairman of Conservatives of Kern County, believes that they're all very unimaginative. What we need to do is boycott the one thing that the French invented and that the French have refined, and that's lovemaking. Don't have sex. And throw it right back in the French people's faces, and in so doing, they'll be stunned. 1-800-449-8686, Phil Henry Show.
The Phil Henry Show, 1-800-449-8686, pure exhibitionism.
French give us sex, Phil. We're handing it right back on the end of a boot.
Okay, I've got with me Larry Grover, who believes that boycotting the sex act really shoves it right back up the French you-know-what.
Right up the old joy passage.
1-800-449-8686. Here is Geraldine. Go ahead, Geraldine.
Hi, how are you?
Fine, ma'am.
I'm actually French, but voulez-vous coucher avec moi ce soir doesn't refer to any act whatsoever. It just means, do you want to sleep with me tonight? So that was my first point.
My understanding, it was an invitation to a degenerate sex act.
Yes, but it has nothing to do with any sexual position whatsoever.
Can I be blunt?
Yes.
My understanding was it was an invitation to anal sex.
No, it's not. The lady
No, it was not.
No, it's not.
Not at all. Nothing at all.
You'll forgive me, Geraldine. I'm sure you're a nice lady, but because you are French, I think you probably have reason to mislead me.
My second point is, if you think not having sex is going to change anything in French people's mind, you're wrong. And I'm probably more American at heart than any of American people out there. But it's not going to change anything. French
Geraldine,
people are not going to be hurt whatsoever by doing it. So I think
French
it's really
Canadian?
Irrelevant.
Are you French Canadian or are you French?
No, I'm French from France.
When the French see that we're boycotting sex, they'll be completely devastated, I believe, because it's the only thing they've contributed to mankind.
Not at all. I don't feel bad. I'm still going to get some.
Well, I'm sure you'll get some if you have enough money in your purse. But here
I'm married to an American, so it'll be fine. Trust
me. You're married to an American. Phil, I think
this
lady is French intelligence trying to misinform the United States. And I say that with due respect, Geraldine. I know that you are a lady who is probably a nice person, but I'm not for a moment fooled into thinking that you are a regular French citizen living here.
There's a lot more...
Wait a minute. Regular
French people,
wait,
at least I know that most of the people that I know over in France feel the same way I do.
Are you working for French intelligence, yes or no? Are you working for French intelligence, yes or no?
Come on.
I'm sorry?
Do you work for any arm of the French intelligence service?
No, I'm not. Not at all. Trust me.
Now, you understand, Geraldine, because you're French, taking it in the back door is not...
Okay, come on. Understand you're talking to a lady, please.
Yeah, and I'm sure you're old enough to be my father. So.
Wait a minute, is your husband in a wheelchair? Because only somebody messed up would want to sleep with a French woman.
Okay, you get the opportunity now to start insulting this woman because of her nationality? Is that it?
Get you. You were on the air a half hour ago talking about boycotting French products.
I'm not indicting this individual woman, okay?
You know,
can I ask a question and I say that, you know, what is with the armpits? Are you going to shave them finally?
You know,
you probably have heard all these jokes, haven't you, Geraldine?
Yeah, I have, and I found them amusing myself.
What's that, dear?
I found them amusing myself, you know, but what am I going to say? You are ignorant people, and...
I'm ignorant. At this... Are you putting me on? You realize that the French people, when they see that I'm not getting any, they'll be crushed.
Yeah.
No, they're not.
Why
That's
not?
Where you're wrong. You'll be crushed. You'll be horny for the rest of your life, and French people will still get some.
Yes, but they'll be seeing Americans.
What is it going to do to them? They don't care. They don't care what you do.
How come the French men don't shave down there, and it looks like they got on wool shorts?
You know.
All right. Look. You
don't have a point.
Ma'am, I do have a point.
That just proves your ignorance even more. So whatever.
I think you said. Are you short?
I'm sorry?
Are you a short one? Are you a short lady? 5 foot what?
5 foot one.
You sound cute. You sound almost pixie-ish.
I'm sorry?
You sound like you're kind of a little, you know, French doll.
Okay, so now what are we doing, Larry? You picking her up? I thought you were putting down sex.
I am. I just want to know what would attract an American man to her.
There's a lot of beautiful French women.
I can put him on the phone if you'd like, and he'll tell you.
Okay, as soon as you take him off the ventilator, that'd be great.
Now, yeah.
All right, look, Geraldine, thank you for your call. I appreciate it.
Geraldine,
thank
a tip
so
of the
much.
Beretta. Now make a goat sound for me, will you?
Okay,
I'm
that's,
sorry?
Never mind, dear. Thank you for your call, Geraldine.
Thank you.
What a rude son of a bitch you are.
Mr. Henry, we're at war in the French...
Shut up. 1-800-449-8686. If we boycott sex, that'll show the French because it's the one thing that they've contributed to the world. 1-800-449-8686, The Phil Hendry Show.
The Phil Hendry Show, 1-800-449-8686. Communist influenced. The Phil Hendry Show is back.
There have been many discussions about boycotting a variety of French products. The gentleman we have on the line with us, Larry Grover of Conservatives of Kern County, believes that boycotting the act of sex, the act of lovemaking, will hurt the French in that it was something that they refined and developed. I have to ask you that, Larry, why wine, boycotting wine or boycotting cheese and these things would not work?
Yeah, high and mighty about having...
Could you repeat that again because we didn't hear it?
I was going to say the French are all high and mighty about having invented sex. But one of the things that they don't count on is the American spirit. Something that has been alive for 200 plus years, Phil. As Americans, we can hold it and not play with it or anything for weeks. And I think it's something to be proud of. And I can tell my French friends that are listening in, and you know they're listening in, you know that French intelligence monitors American radio and television. Let me just say this loud and clear for all of my beret-wearing friends sitting in trucks and monitoring eavesdropping equipment. My wife learned a thing or two from one of your kind in Paris during her school days back in the early 80s. But not once in the 10 years of our marriage did I allow her to use any of it in bed with us.
Is that it?
That's it.
Here is Susan. Go ahead, Susan.
Well, I'm not young. I'm 45. I'm well-educated.
Well, you're as young as a day, dear.
I've been to France, and I'm happily married. I don't believe that the French will really care if we have sex or not, and I believe that this gentleman, and I use the term loosely, basically had some problems previously with the French and his marriage, and that he's now using the problem with France as an excuse for starting this whole campaign.
Ma'am, the French invented something called the French tickler because they didn't think American men could please women. See, that's insult. That's an insult to us.
Well,
that's a slap to our face. That is a slap so hard it draws blood.
I think it's just a personal preference. I think that there are very many American people that have sex and they're happy. I think it's just you have some personal issues from your marriage, and you're taking them to an extreme extent. I don't believe the French will
Susan, can I be honest with you? Can I be honest with you? I'll never forget.
Can I stop you?
Well, no, you can stop me. I won't talk if you don't want me to talk.
Well, I think you know what your problems are.
No, ma'am.
And I think that you need to deal with the issues.
Yes,
and probably
I do need to deal with the issue, and the issue is Saddam Hussein and his puppy dogs in Paris, who wander around him like dogs waiting for fresh meat.
Well, I think the Saddam Hussein issue is definitely different from your lack of sex, and I'm very sorry for
you.
Can
I say something, Susan? There was a phrase that was invented in France. You probably heard it when you were over in France. Nothing speaks more clearly, I think, to the sexual degeneracy of the French and their feeling of superiority to us. And it goes like this. I see London, I see France, I see Susan's underpants.
You know, I never heard that phrase when I was over there. I think I heard it in America as a small child, as a little tease when children were playing games. But when I was in France, I believe I was treated respectfully as I deserved. And
well,
I think that, once again, I go back to the phrase, why would they care?
The fact that
you're not having sex, I'm very sorry for you.
No, don't feel sorry. I do it with... And when I do decide that I will have sex again, I make love as an American. It is clean. It is respectful. I use an egg timer so that I am not in any way, shape, or form... Well, if the lady finds our troops being in harm's way funny, then okay. I don't
find our troops being funny because I'm very American and I am very behind our president. I am very supportive of our troops.
I got to ask the same question Susan asked. What do you mean an egg timer?
I do not overstay my welcome in a woman. You know, I don't want to use graphic language, but I don't overstay my welcome.
What do you mean overstay your welcome? What are you talking about?
Is that bizarre, or is it just me?
No, that's okay. Go ahead and laugh. Go on.
Larry.
No, go ahead. Make fun of me. Laugh at the American. Laugh at the patriot. Go ahead. It's fine.
I'm married to an American, and I would laugh if he took out an egg timer when we were together.
Are you from France?
No, I'm not. And no one in my family is.
What do you mean an egg timer? I don't understand.
I do not believe in disrespecting a woman. 3 minutes, you're out, you're done, the sheets are washed and bleached. She can get back into her clothes and get back to what she's doing. I don't disrespect women. I said it for three
That's
minutes.
That's romantic, very romantic.
When I said it for 3 minutes. Thank you. I said it for 3 minutes, and when it dinged...
She was kidding.
I'm sorry. That's so just... So
right, that's
bizarre.
No, Susan, that's fine. You can laugh at me because history, I think, will exonerate me. I set the egg timer for 3 minutes, and when it dings, I kiss her on the forehead, I shower, and I get dressed.
And leave, because I'm sure by then she wants you out of there. If anyone, if my husband ever took out an egg timer, I believe I would want him. I wouldn't even allow that.
I'm sorry, dear. I didn't hear that. Your car phone broke up. Can you say it again?
I'm just saying, I cannot imagine having an egg timer that pretty much takes away from the romance, and I believe that's pretty un-American.
Well, if your husband ever did that, what would you do?
Oh, I guess I'm out of range.
Okay, your egg timer must have gone off.
All right, that's fine. What a jackass.
Look, Susan, you spent time in France, so your standards have been lowered. I understand they're still listening. You probably allow your that husband of yours to saddle up. And I feel that that is a French creation. And
I really got to say, an egg timer, having sex with an egg timer, it's got to be the biggest bummer that any woman is ever going to go through, man. I mean, and if you did that once, there wouldn't be a second time.
How do you know? Because that's exactly what happened.
Well, how is it you got four kids?
You know what? Maybe those kids aren't all mine.
Yeah.
The first minute I go quarter speed, the second minute half speed, and then the third minute full throttle. I'll tell you what, man, I'm a pipeline son of a bitch.
Okay, that's great. You're bringing some lumber, huh, dude?
Word.
Anyway, Larry Grover, boycott sex. The French will really, it'll stun them. 1-800-449-8686. You're listening to the world-famous Phil Henry Show.
The Phil Henry Show. 1-800-449-8686. We eat kittens.
I did the voice of, in that preceding bit, I did the voice of Larry Grover. Our number is 1-800-449-8686. Phil Henry Show website, philhenryshow.com. Check out our souvenir shop. Get a backstage pass. You want to figure out what this program is about? That's what you got to do. You must get a backstage pass. It's only $6.95 a month, or you can get a year's subscription. It saves you money, but forget it. Most people don't even, they don't go there, right? Cool. Do the monthly, man, because they make more bread that way. I'm trying to save you, Jack. But if you buy a monthly subscription, I make millions. 1-800-449-8686. I was just reading here about Mr. Rogers dying, and they were quoting Captain Kangaroo. I didn't know that guy was still around. Captain Kangaroo? He's got to be 112. Jesus. How old was he when I was watching him? What was he, like 25? I watched Captain Kangaroo every morning. I'd get up, and I was a punky little kid, and I'd get the bowl of Cheerios, and then they'd break in, you know, with some news story about getting blacks into the University of Alabama, and then, now we return to Captain Kangaroo. And he was solid all the way, Captain freaking Kangaroo. Maybe they used a different captain from the one they got now. But anyway, Captain Kangaroo, see, that's the guy I knew. Mr. Rogers, I don't know for, you know, he was a nice guy. I talked to Mr. Rogers once. I met him. Very nice man. Very nice guy. But Captain Kangaroo, they quoted him on the death of Mr. Rogers. And I go, holy Jesus, this guy's still around. And the cool thing about Captain Kangaroo, that's exactly how he looks in real life. He's got the cut off hair with the mustache. He wanders around with like bangs and a Dutch boy haircut. And, you know, I'd watch this guy as a kid, and he'd have Dancing Bear, Grandfather Clock, a couple of puppets, I forget their names. Mr. Green Jeans always came in with like a yak or something, you know. Well, Mr. Green Jeans, what do you got? Well, this is a two-headed llama. And then Captain Kangaroo would talk about life, whatever the hell. And he must have been, because of how old he is now, he must have been like 18. 28 in 1955. So when I was watching this guy, he was like in his early 30s. He already had the double chin. He had the big double chin. You remember him? And cool show. And here's the great thing about that show, by the way, seriously. CBS should go back to that show. And I'll tell you, or any kind of a kid show, I'll tell you why. Back in the day, you know, they were rolling with Captain Kangaroo when NBC had the Today Show and ABC had just put Good Morning America on the air. Before Good Morning America, it was like local crap. Here in L.A., it was Chucko the Clown. Chucko was on early in the morning, you know. So, hey, check out Chucko. He'd spin that thing on his head, and then they'd zero in for a cartoon. And then they'd zero back out, and there's Chucko hopping around. And then someone would come up with a baseball bat and just take his head right off. And just a wonderful time for all the kids that were there. They used to be, what is it, you know, I can't believe, man, that mothers would get up at 4 and take their kids into downtown L.A. or whatever the hell to go to this Chucko show. Then they got that Good Morning America. So anyway, here's Good Morning America, here's the Today Show, and here's Captain Kangaroo. And it was really original. CBS, it was totally original. But no, they couldn't keep Captain Kangaroo on, could they? Because they were losing money. So they decided to put on the CBS Early Morning News, and that thing has stunk the joint out for as long as it's been on the air. How long has it been on the air? 20 years? That thing has been a smeller ever since they bounced the captain off the air. It's like the late 70s is when they finally told Kangaroo to take a powder. They brought him into the office. You guys want to see me? Yeah, Kangaroo, sit down. Look, cat's name is Kangaroo. His real name is Ed Kangaroo. Yeah, boss, you want to see me? Yeah, Kangaroo, good. Yeah, right. Sit down. Look, Kangaroo. Look, times are changing. The world's a different place in 1955. You were coming on. We had Howdy Doody and all that. We can't do it anymore. Well, you guys promised me we could always do a kid's show on CBS. Yeah, well, you know, promises are made to be broken. Now, I got this chick, Paula Zahn. I'm going to bring her on. She's got the big teeth. This is going to be hitting it out of the park. Get out of here with your funky Kangaroo show. Look, we're going to pay off. And it's just been nice knowing you, Bob. So get out of here. And you might want to change your name. You guys will be sorry. Right. Well, guess what? 20-some-odd years later, they're sorry. That CBS Morning News, what was the latest thing they tried? Bryant Gumbel? He stunk it out. Then that Mark McEwen, who all you wanted to do was just haul off, turn the rings around on your right hand and haul off and clock him. That guy. That Mark McEwen, I never felt more like just walking up to a guy and punching his face. Him and Shepard Smith. That Shepard Smith, what's it with him? The most watched TV show in all of prime time. God, I hate him. They need Jillian Barbary. That's what they need. Jillian is sex on wheels. She's like that big mouth woman that you just finally you throw her out of your house because she may be good looking, but she doesn't shut up. Just get out. What are you talking about? Get out. By the way, this just in, CBS has hired Chucko the Clown to star on the new CBS Morning News, so it's going to be fantastic. You can judge by the laughter in the room whether Chris wrote the line or Janice wrote the line. That line got no laughs, Chris. No laughs, man. Yeah! No laughs, dude. So, seriously, so it's been a lousy move. It's been a lousy move ever since. All right, Men's Health Magazine, what you told us, what's the first thing a man should do when a woman dumps him? What's the first thing, Craig, that you would do when a chick dumps you? And, Chris, I want you to answer. And, guys at home, what's the first thing you should do when a girl dumps you? Now, come up with an answer, and I'll tell you where your answer is on our scale here. I've got five possible answers. All right, Craig said stalker. All righty. Craig said stalker. And let's find out what my brother Chris says. Go hang with your friends and drink. Now, my answer was go get drunk. So I think that it was probably the same answer as Chris's. Craig would stalker. All right, here are the top five answers. Actually, there's six, excuse me. Look her in the eye, smile, and thank her. I have to break up with you. Thank God. Thank God. I mean, I don't mean any offense, but thank the living Christ. You mean it's you? Wow, you really wanted me to? I was hoping you'd do it so I wouldn't have to. Oh, Jesus. All right, let me just check that off my list here. Okay, anything else? Because I really got to...
I've been meaning to tell you I don't want to see you anymore.
Wow. Well, that's a load off. Yeah. Well, that kills two birds with one stone because we just had sex, too. So, all right, that's number one answer. Number two answer, actually, yeah, number two answer is Chris and my answer. Get drunk with the guys. 26% of the guys answered said that. The first one, look her in the eye, smile and thank her, 36% of the guys said that. So, number two, get drunk with the guys, which that's been my number one solution since, you know, when I was, like, single. Every woman, geez, now that I think about it, I don't think any woman ever really did dump me. No, I'm kidding. I know what I did. I used to go have sex with her mother and sister. Now, number three, offer her, this is fantastic. If a woman breaks up with you, you say, you offer her some breakup sex. You don't dig it? Number four, try and win her back. Bad move. Always a bad move. Always a bad move. Number six, road trip. Yeah, I've done that too. You know, you go out on the road, you hit the road. Like, back before I had a car, I'd hitchhike. Just hitchhike. But you go out and just go a road trip. And the final answer is tell her about that girl in Vegas, which is very cool, you know.
I can't see anymore.
Well, I didn't want to say this while we were together, but there was a dancer in Las Vegas that I was sort of commuting to. And the only reason why I say it to you is you may want to go ahead and get a swab done. But I think it'll be okay. I really do. It only hurts every other time I pee. How about you? Have you noticed that? All right, so there you go. What you should do if a woman dumps you. Stalker, by the way, Craig, wasn't on the list. All right, 1-800-449-8686. Don't forget our website, philhenryshow.com. Fantastic place to go and chill while you're listening to our show and also to listen to our archives, listen to our 30-day archive. We've got a game section in there, too. You can play Spooge Man, our version of Pac-Man. You can also play, what's my favorite game? Hendroids, which is our version of Asteroids. Lots of stuff to do on the Phil Henry Show website.
The Phil Henry Show, 1-800-449-8686. We eat kittens. And now, Phil Hendry.
You know the headline said U.S. troops kill seven at Iraqi checkpoint, and let's make sure we all know that they were women and children, and if you believe for 1 minute that those were just women and children, and that they weren't somehow sent in by Saddam Hussein, I'm sorry, you haven't yet figured out exactly what's going on with this war. I know that there are people who desperately want to believe that those American soldiers opened up on innocent women and children, but I refuse to believe it because it's too pat. It's too pat. It's not that I don't think our soldiers can't do anything wrong. It's just too obvious. I said this at the very beginning of this war, and I'm going to say it again. Nothing could make Saddam Hussein happier than women and children dying. That's exactly what the Iraqi regime needs. Everybody knows it. Not even their most ardent supporters, like Peter Arnett, wouldn't deny that Saddam Hussein right now is doing a little Irish jig in his bunker because women and children are dead. And anybody that wants the United States and the United Kingdom not to fulfill this mission, they're doing a little dance right now because women and children are dead. And the information minister for Iraq, whatever the guy's name is, Effendi, that guy's doing a dance. The more women, the more children that die, the better they like it. And, of course, Al Jazeera, they're going to play this one big. In the Arab world, there is no such thing as an objective view of this war. And among certain American and British reporters, there's no such thing as an objective view of the war. But then there's a difference between reporters and commentators. And what I've been doing the last couple of weeks, though I'm an entertainer by training, what I have been doing is commenting. And when you hear a commentator, you should automatically say, this is just that slob's opinion. That's the first thing that ought to come into your mind. Not this guy's giving me the truth, but that's just one guy's opinion. When you listen to Phil Hendry commenting on the news, you say, if you're intelligent, well, that's him. What does he know? He's just a guy that used to do funny voices. Now he's on the radio and he's making these comments. You decide for yourself whether it makes sense. Reporting the news is a different thing altogether. Reporting means you report. You try to give it an objective view. In other words, there's five questions you answer in the world of reporting. You probably heard this. You're supposed to give the who, the what, the when, the where, and the why. Who? What? Who was it? What happened? When did it happen? Where did it happen? And why did it happen? You, who? Women and children. What? They were blown up. When? Sometime yesterday. Where? In Iraq. Why? American soldiers opened fire on them when they didn't stop. That's the end of the story. Now, the news commentators, the spin doctors, the spin masters, the information ministers, the ministry of fear, the ministry of idiots, they all put their spin on it. But the reporter gives the reportage. Unless, of course, you're some kind of a new kind of reporter, you're bigger than the news. Like Peter Arnett, he's bigger than the news. He's a personality. He's not just a reporter. He's a news exporter. He's a news pronouncicator. He's whatever he thinks he is. He's working for the Daily Mirror is what he's doing. That's where he's at right now. He's working for a British rag, and he's, I'm sure, just skipping with glee. U.S. troops killed 7 Iraqi women and children at a checkpoint Monday when the Iraqi van would not stop as ordered, a military official said. Okay, that's the who, what, when, where, and why. Now, what happened, in my opinion, as a news commentator? And you, as the consumer of news, what do you think happened? You think it was a bunch of American war criminals who had a absolute thirst for Iraqi women and children's blood? Do you think it was another example of the American oil machine with its military arm reaching out and looking almost as if it's a hungry snake for women and children to consume? Do you want to get down there on Market Street, out there in Times Square, jump around on the west side, feeling all giddy and with butterflies in your stomach because finally the huge American military apparatus has done what you wanted it to do? It killed some women and children, and now it makes the sewing circle there on Saturday afternoon when you get out in front of the federal building, it makes you all feel real good. And it makes you feel like you're right, and it makes you feel self-righteous. All these other extremely predictable things, utterly predictable. We predicted them 2 weeks ago, and I said it 2 days into the war. I said, this is bad because there's not enough dead women and children. They got to get some. They know it. The Iraqis know it. And I'm telling you right now, those women and children, those women, not the children, the women were operatives, Republican Guard operatives. They were induced, seduced, hired, paid, however you want to put it, to martyr themselves and martyr the children they were with on behalf of the regime of Saddam Hussein to further push the propaganda war in the favor of Saddam. Right now on the streets of the Middle East, the people are angry. And the reason why they're angry is because they're not getting any news. They're not getting reporting. They're getting spin. They're getting commentary. There is no news in the Middle East. There's no such thing as a news reporter in the Middle East. There's none. There's no such thing in the Arab world as a professional reporter because their jobs working for these totalitarian regimes is to give the news that the regime wants them to give. There's no reporter in Iraq. Al Jazeera is a joke. They play videotapes. That's all they do. They've got guys who probably look a little bit like Peter Arnett. You know, they have the Western model of the reporter with the vest and the, I've told you, the little film flaps, and they've got the glasses perched on the forehead and the scruffy 3-day growth of beard, and they look weathered and beaten, and they have their microphone, and they're just trying to get you the news. Nobody's trying to get anybody the news in the Middle East. And as a result, when they feed pictures of dead women and children, Hussein knows exactly what that does to the so-called Arab street. You've probably been hearing that term, the Arab street. That means the people of the Middle East. Why do they say the people of the Middle East? Why do they say the Arab street? As if everybody's living in the gutter over there. The dead and wounded were among 13 women and children in a van that approached the checkpoint but did not stop. Soldiers fired warning shots. They shot into the vehicle's engine, neither of which stopped it. Meanwhile, fresh U.S. forces are flowing to the Persian Gulf, including 500 members of an Army cavalry regiment being sent ahead of schedule to help protect U.S. supply lines from Iraq attack. There have been upbeat Pentagon assessments, and so on and so forth. The only way that Saddam Hussein can win this war, there's no way he can win the war. The only way that he can make it difficult for us as we attempt to rebuild Iraq, because there's no way this is going to stop. There's no way the United States pulls out of Iraq. There's no way that people are going to get, some people are going to get their wish that the U.S. Operation stalls and we suddenly have to remove ourselves. That ain't going to happen. Kiss that one goodbye. For guys like Hussein and anybody else that works for him or unknowingly supports him, like some of our fine anti-war sewing circle members, the only thing you can hope for is that the rebuilding job in Iraq is made a complete mess by dead women and children, which would induce saboteurs to somehow, you know, impede our progress in Iraq and trying to bring that country some stability, because after all, it's the horrific U.S. war machine. You know who's a tremendous spokesperson for this effort? And they haven't had her on TV near as much as they should, and that's Condoleezza Rice. And she said something, she's absolutely brilliant. She's a woman who looks good on television. She's well-spoken. She doesn't go, brr, she's not stumbling around, and she knows exactly what she's trying to say. She said something brilliant. She said the event 9/11 was a tectonic event. It shifted the so-called tectonic plates of geopolitics in the world. It has strained old alliances. It's made the world anew in the way we look at it. And the old ways of doing things are the old ways of doing things. That you can't do it anymore the way we used to do it. That is applicable not only on our side, or the American side, or the Western side, or the way that we conduct war out here in the good old USA, it's also true in the Middle Eastern picture. Whoever runs the show over there also isn't getting that things have changed. Here's what they're not getting. Let's say in the Middle East we have Saddam. He's a guy who figures he can go back on the old models, which is dead women and children. The Iraqi nation is being pummeled by the war machine, and this is bought pretty much along the streets of the Middle East. This is not going to deter any society that's got the muscle and the wisdom, like the United States, from defending itself against something that we're very, very familiar with now. We didn't quite understand it, but 9/11 brought it into sharp focus. And you can come up with all of the dead women and children you want. The facts are these. 9/11 put into very sharp focus. There are terror organizations that are interconnected throughout the world. They don't pass memorandum back and forth, and you won't get an IRS file on them. And this is the childish thinking of people who say that there's no connection between Al-Qaeda and Iraq. The Ansar al-Islam in the north of Iraq is a Al-Qaeda offshoot. They train Al-Qaeda. Al-Qaeda has trained them, and they are under the protection of Saddam Hussein because he wanted his own little terror organization to go out and do what he needed them to do. If you don't know that, if you don't have to believe it, I don't care what you believe, but if you don't know that, then you're light years behind following this story. The new view, and the only way to do things, is that despite the propaganda, and which is old school, on the part of the Middle Eastern countries and terror organizations, despite all of the old school thinking about the American colonialist war machine, the American colonialist war machine, quote unquote, is going to defend itself and its people. Regardless. Not only that, but it's a necessary action right now because this is setting the stage for the survival of our country over the next 100 years. You don't think so? You're light years behind understanding what's going on. Light years behind. This is setting the stage for the literal survival of this country. What are you talking about? Iraq's a small country. Don't worry about it. You fall into that Iraq's a small country trap. You fall into that big bad America beating up on little tiny country trap. And you just don't yet understand what's happening. Because it's much bigger than Iraq. It is an effort that is international. It is Islamist in some ways. It's anti-West in other ways, if you want to call it that. It's socialist, it's fascist, but it has one goal, and that is to destabilize and topple the traditional powers of the West. One of them happens to be the country you live in, the United States of America. We're not going to let that happen. Ain't going to happen. All right, our number is 1-800-449-8686. The Phil Henry Show continuing our analysis of the war in Iraq. We're going to get back to the funny stuff later on tonight, as a matter of fact. We will actually have some comedy relief for you this evening, something that we do very well, probably better than most. And we'll continue analyzing this war because we need to, because I've been listening to some of the shows and some of the commentary on this, and it's the most facile dog crap. So it's almost as if we're compelled to do it here on our show, and we will continue to do that. 1-800-449-8686. 1-800-449-8686. Phil Henry Show.
Phil Henry Show. 1-800-449-8686.
Show is back. 1-800-449-8686.
I got the front page of the Los Angeles Times here in California on Saturday, and I'm sure across the country your paper had different pictures coming from the theater of operations, but on Saturday, was it Saturday, March 30? Yeah. No, I don't know. I forget. Sunday. The front page has a picture of a Marine medical corpsman holding a baby. And it's actually a little girl, and she looks very undernourished. If you look at the picture, she's skinny, undernourished. And I look at that picture, and here's the thing that I want, because I believe that the media has failed miserably in covering this war. And I don't think anybody can dispute it. They have failed miserably. They have overreported in some cases. They've underreported in most cases. They have propagandized, whether for or against. They've done everything but their job well. And I think it comes because this is a generation of reporters that don't have any model. They haven't had any experience before this to fall back on. They've, you know, there was a time when war reporting was, you had a typewriter and you were scrambling ashore with a bunch of troops and you were trying to type your story in the middle of shelling and you were trying to get it out. And there wasn't any of this. There simply was no hard lines, hard satellite lines, satellite phone lines, and somebody, technicians making sure that you were up and running, and all of the glamour and the glitz of the pictures, which sort of blurred the story, that wasn't happening. I don't know if the guys reporting the stories back then were any better, to be honest with you. Edward R. Murrow on the rooftops of London as the V-2 rockets were falling is one of those classic images that a lot of people talk about. He was reporting, watching the people walking to the bomb shelters in London. What we've had in this war, though, are hysterical reporters after 3 or 4 days saying we're losing the war because we haven't found Saddam Hussein and stuck his head on a bayonet. We've had propagandists like Peter Arnett getting absolutely used and fooled by the Baghdad regime, which is shocking for a guy of his experience. Just utterly shocking. We've had nincompoop reporters giving away position and unit strength, which is, as I said last week, some guys have been tortured to death not giving information like that. We had guys in Vietnam hung from their arms from the rafters for not giving information like that. And we got these clowns, Geraldo Rivera, apparently one of the latest, giving up troop strength, position, everything. This is something that the enemy uses to target our guys. You don't want to be broadcasting this stuff. We've had stupid questions given by one of the guys from the New Yorker asking an idiotic question. Why should we even be here? You're not giving us any information. And the general saying to him, what information do you think I'm going to give you? You think I'm going to give you the number of guys we have in any given place and how strong the force is and when we're going to attack and what time of day? Yeah, at about 6:30 tomorrow morning, we're going to be heading into Baghdad. So you guys are going to want to set your cameras up for that so you can get some real good pictures. Now, the reason why I bring up the picture on the front of the L.A. Times on Sunday is because if it's an actual scene that photographer is catching, I got no problem with it. It's a beautiful moment that a guy with a motor-driven camera, of course, so you're going, you know, you got 800 shots you're rolling off, man. You got to get one of them's got to be good. But if it was something that he was simply capturing as he panned the horizon with his camera, that's great. These pose shots are what bother me. And you may come back with, well, Phil, you know the famous picture of the Marines pushing the flag up on Mount Suribachi? That was posed, too. Well, the fact is, it had just happened. Rosenthal, the photographer, Joe Rosenthal, who won a Pulitzer, saw it happen, and he asked the guys to do it again. I think that's slightly different from telling some guy, maybe, I don't know that this is what happened, but maybe, hey, get that kid and sit out in the mud, and I want to get a picture of you with the kid. Oh, okay. When you're posing a shot, you're not reporting news. You're posing a sheer. What are you? I don't know what the hell you are. You're a photo artist or something. You're a family photographer. Yeah, go to work for Sears or something, man. You can have them sitting there with a big beach ball. What the hell is that? You're doing portraits for the family. So when you look at this picture of this guy, and I'm sure he's a fine man. I'm not denigrating the man at all. He's just a Marine who was doing his job, and maybe, and the photographer is somebody by the name of Damon Sagoli from Reuters, who said maybe, I don't know what he said, but if he posed the shot, it's not a truthful shot. It's the journalist trying to create the news. That is against every ethic I've ever heard of in the news gathering business. And we've had a lot of that in this reporting. The media, electronic and print, has flopped covering this war. And they need to scramble and get back on their feet because they're making themselves look like jackasses. Unlike guys like me, I make myself look like a jackass for a living, and they pay me well for it. All right, our number is 1-800-449-8686. One more comment to make. Nope, I'm going to have to save this comment for after the break. It's a very important comment. I want you to all gather in just a few seconds because it's something that I've needed to say for a few days. 1-800-449-8686. Nope, it's not I quit, Greg. Thanks.
The Phil Henry Show is back.
You know, I throw these things out for you to consider. And I think the last thing we talked about was valid, that the media has failed in its reporting of this conflict. They have, I'm not saying it's their job to make the war easier because they're objective reporters, but they certainly are wasting a lot of people's time with their questions. And the other thing that I wanted to say is this. So there's like two things there. There's the failure of the media and its job. And then there is this. I'm no longer going to debate the validity of this war with anybody. We're in it. We're fighting it. We're going to fight it to the end, whether you like it or not. It's a fact of life. You're not going to end it. No one's pulling out. What's happening here is a irresistible force. This is an irresistible force. This is something that cannot be stopped. We happen to have at this point in history, and this is coming from a Democrat, sports fans, we happen to have at this point in history a president, but more importantly, I believe, an advisory team around the president who understands just exactly what 9/11 represented. To the 20th century thinker, it was the justifiable attack upon a ruthless colonialist imperialist power like America by the poor peoples of the world who'd been subjugated for too long. That's to the 20th century thinker. To the 21st century thinker, it's more. And when I say it's more, what I mean is this. Some of it came out of a feeling of oppression. But feelings of oppression can be justified or they can be concocted because you've been lied to. You understand the difference? My daughter, who's 11 years old, she thinks she's oppressed sometimes. She's 11, and perhaps her life isn't the greatest life that a kid could have because she's got these two big adults telling her what to do. In her mind, she's oppressed. In my mind, she is being led or taught. She's being cared for, even. Now, I'm not saying the third world people are like children and the Western powers are like adults. What I'm saying is their perception of what's happening to them has been colored by their leaders, misreported by their press, as we have pointed out example after example. They have been, essentially, they've had their world, the truth that they're fed, the so-called truth they're fed, the information that they're fed, it's all been manipulated to create a picture, and that is that the West always is and always will be and always was and forevermore evil, bad, and is the cause of every ounce of suffering that they've ever had. It is a lie. It's time for people to say that it's a lie. It's time for people to stand up and say what is actually happening, and that is the opportunistic leadership of the Middle East, all of them money-grubbing, fascistic, and evil, if whatever that word means to you, have created an atmosphere of evil in which their people must live. They've done business with the very Western powers that they say they don't appreciate, that they don't like, and they don't be manipulated by. They have had dollar bills thrown into their lap by these countries. They have had their natural resources exploited by them and them alone, not the United States. We are not exploiting Saudi Arabian oil. Here's something you have to understand. You need to get this. We are not exploiting Saudi Arabian oil. That oil is being pumped out of the ground by the Saudis and sold to us. 21st century thinking is this. Those people, regardless of the wealth that we have, those people are corrupt, and they have led their people by a short path to near ruin. Whether it's Hussein, that fat slob of a king they got in Jordan, I don't know who that guy thinks he's kidding. Who's that guy? He's the son of Hussein, or what, that guy? He's coming over and he's doing the Today Show and everybody thinks he's so charming. He's just the same old guy over there, man, the same old dude, lying, feeding his people what they want to hear, trying to keep his ass on one more day, trying to keep the little crown on his head one more day. Whether it's the Saudis, those people represent an evil effort at manipulating their own people, at destroying their own resources, at destroying their own people. And then, of course, we have the religious nut in the Middle East who has given full sway. He's given powers far and far beyond any power that any religious nut in the United States gets. In the United States, a religious nut, the guy gets on television for a half hour every Sunday and you know, asks us for money. Or occasionally, he barricades himself in a cabin up in Wyoming and picks off a few FBI agents. That's the extent of the religious maniac in America. In the Middle East, this freaking guy has got 4,000 clowns flying planes into buildings. Why? Because the governments over there allow it. Not only do they allow it, they encourage it. And not only do they encourage it, they fund it. They supplement it. They keep it alive. Now do you know why we're at war in Iraq? Or do I need to explain it even more? Well, they never did anything to us. They never did anything to us. All they want to do is kill every American they see, and Jew. If they don't even have Israel over there. You understand it's the Zionist entity. They don't even call it Israel. They don't even have it on a map. Do you understand that these people have allowed their own people, these leaders in the Middle East, have fed their own people so many lies that the hatred over there has completely destroyed
their societies. The hatred is so palpable it has destroyed the society and it is destroying the people in it. This is hatred that has been fostered by the Middle Eastern leader. And I say Middle East leader because I don't know. One of them's a monarch, the other one's a fascist, the other one's a jackass, the other one's a mullah. And they're all, put them all together and what do you got? You got a freaking Tea Party in Alice in Wonderland. You got the Mad Hatter and you got the guy smoking the pipe. These guys, this is the biggest collection of clowns since Ringling Brothers left town. And we're supposed to take them serious. And we're supposed to sit here and we have to actually listen to people say, you're killing Iraqi women and children. Poor Iraq. It's suffering. A small, tiny country. You people who say those things are stuck permanently in the 20th century. Unless you want to unscrew your head and pull it out of your ass before it's too late and start breathing the air of the 21st century. It's over, baby. All those arguments are over. That's old school, old news propaganda. The new reality and the new truth, not propaganda, truth is, the United States, while admitting whatever mistakes it's made in the past, is faced with an evil that has been created, not just by our acts, but more so by the basic corrupt nature of the leadership in the Middle East, an evil that has been created and wants to destroy us. Does it sound dramatic? Well, why don't you take yourself a little trip to New York, go to a little place called Ground Zero, stare into that freaking hole for about a half hour. People say, why are we over there? Go to New York. Why are we fighting this war? Go visit New York. Go to downtown. Go look at the hole. There's ghosts there. 3,000 ghosts. Maybe some night you can actually hear them. Maybe some night you could actually hear them scream. And you can walk the streets of downtown and maybe on a really quiet night, if you can find one in New York, just quiet enough with the winds blowing just the right direction, the moon is hanging in the sky just the right way, you might even hear what people said sounded like gunshots. They were actually bodies hitting the pavement of people jumping from 80 floors up and 70 floors up and 50 floors up. Mothers and fathers. Mothers and fathers. Just like the Iraqi women today. Only these mothers and fathers were working for their families. Maybe on Saturday a ball game, maybe on Sunday a barbecue. They weren't in the employ of Saddam Hussein willingly driving their children to their death, if they were their own children at all. Maybe some night you take a walk downtown, my wife and I did it, and you can still see, as the wind blows, the tattered photographs hanging from the chain link fence, the pictures, hundreds, thousands of pictures of the people that died there. And any New Yorker could look at those pictures and say, I knew that one, and I knew that person, and that person was my cousin, and that person was an old friend of mine, and this person I used to work with. You think New York's a big city? Boy, when we went to Ground Zero that night, it was the smallest town I'd ever been in, because every New Yorker that I ran into said, I know people here, I know these faces. That act was committed by a group of people who were funded, trained, encouraged, impelled by a terror-sponsoring environment. Forget about Iraq. Environment throughout the entire Middle East, encouraging terrorism and encouraging these kinds of acts against unarmed civilians. This is the new war against America, and it is being waged not just by Iraq, but by Saudi Arabia, by Egypt, by Lebanon, by Jordan, by every one of those guys over there that say that they're our friend. People say, and they've been asking me this the last week, well, who's next? Why don't we go after Korea? Don't worry about it. Maybe we will. What, do you want us to? Why don't we go after Saudi Arabia? You asking us to? I'm not quite sure I know what that question means. Is it you really want us to, or you just want to hear yourself talk? Because as far as I'm concerned, as we continue to uncover these organizations, these individuals, with the kind of intent that they have to murder Americans and to destroy our society, as far as I'm concerned, Iraq's just the beginning. In any event, I say all of that to say, I'm no longer interested in debating whether we ought to be in Iraq or not. If you still want to have that argument, then, buddy, you're never going to get it. You're never going to get it. If you still have questions like this, there's no linkage between Iraq and Al-Qaeda. Man, you ain't never going to get it.
if you're still asking questions like this, it's all about oil. Brother, go talk to, go on down here to the kindergarten or something, man. Maybe a little, you can do a presentation for the third graders. If you're still saying things like my wonderful brother-in-law, who I've nicknamed Dumbass, you know, when Dumbass sends me these emails and he says things like, this is the imperialist American power trying to exert its influence over the economy of the world. You have got such a small part of the story, it's not even worth going into anymore. So I'm not going into it anymore. Doesn't mean I don't want to hear you. But I'm not going to debate these silly premises any longer. Now, we're there, we're staying there, and whether you like it or not, we ain't leaving until that guy is cooked inside that bunker, which I understand is so well reinforced it might make a nice oven. They blow out the air conditioning. You know, that guy's got to breathe. You know, I learned that from watching The Dirty Dozen. You know, you got to breathe. There's got to be air, some kind of an air tube coming up from his bunker. You can cook him in that thing. We don't have to get him out of it. All right, I think that's all I got to say for the time being. I may add a few things. So let me give our phone number out here, 1-800-449-8686, 1-800-449-8686. We also have the Peter Arnett story, and I also want to get into the I also want to get into a little bit of Geraldo Rivera. But let me just restate the top story today and what the truth is about that story. There were how many women? There were seven Iraqi women and children killed at a checkpoint. And don't even kid yourself into thinking it was anything other than seven women, or a few women, however many there were, willingly driving these children to their death so they could martyr themselves for big Saddam. 1-800-449-8686, Phil Hendry Show.
Phil Hendry, 1-800-449-8686.
I tell you, no, I better not tell you, because it's meaningless. I was going to tell you what I'm having for dinner, but stir-fried dog. But I didn't want you to feel bad. Anyway, it's great. It's a little Thai place up the street. It's not stir-fried dog. It's very good. If it was stir-fried dog, it's still really good. Best dog I ever had. U.S. military moves reporter Geraldo Rivera from Iraq. Veteran reporter Geraldo Rivera, correspondent for Fox News, is being removed from Iraq by the United States military for reporting Western troop movements in the war. He was with the U.S. military unit in the field, and the commander felt that he had compromised operational information. The commander thought it was best to get the reporter out of his battle space, and we understand he's being removed from Iraq. Well, I guess that's his job as a reporter. And it's their job as the military not to get guys killed, and if whatever Geraldo is doing is going to get somebody killed, then he's out of there. That's just dumb. But what this clown Arnett did, giving an interview, people say, you know, as I mentioned at the top of the hour, what did he do wrong? Here's what he did wrong. He's not a news reporter. He's a propagandist. He's a commentator. He is commenting on the news. And what is more, it sounds to me like he is simply a propagandist. He paints himself as some kind of a big war correspondent. The guy sounds like he's petrified of saying anything against the Iraqis. Maybe he thinks it's great that he was able to stay in Baghdad for 12 years and everything that he ever saw was fantastic. Well, naturally, when you're being led around by the nose by a bunch of people from the information ministry, and then when, you know, he starts reporting on the war, it has a decided pro-Iraqi spin. For instance, you call this reporting when the guy says that I like to send the news back to the United States because it helps people who are against the war. That ain't reporting. That's a guy who has an agenda. That's a guy that's got an agenda. He's got an agenda which is, let's see if we can't, you know, affect the news as opposed to reporting it. I've been here many times, and in my commentaries on television, I would tell the Americans about the determination of the Iraqi forces, the determination of the government, and the willingness to fight for their country, he said. How do you know who's fighting for the country? This whole idea that the Iraqi people have risen up and are repelling the Americans, says who? We got Marines capturing Iraqis, taking off the civilian clothes and underneath their Iraqi uniforms. What's that about? You got people running out of Basra being shot at by their own forces. Well, you gotta be stupid to think that the only thing that's happening in Iraq right now is that either is what we've heard and what people have observed. People are being compelled to fight at gunpoint. Otherwise, their women and children get slaughtered. How else do you figure Iraqi citizens fleeing their own troops? The cold, brutal truth continues to come out, continues to leak out. The people who said we shouldn't have gone in continue to look more foolish every day. Chemical suits. Al-Ansar Islam in the north of the country, a Al-Qaeda organization training and funded by Saddam. And then, of course, the brutality of the regime, which even the most ardent lover of the Iraqi people or the country of Iraq couldn't possibly see as anything other a Nazi government exterminating its own people. Forget about what the United States or the UN might have done with sanctions. You are witnessing with your own eyes the attempted extermination of the Iraqi people so as to keep Saddam Hussein in power, wherever he may be. And it must be someplace really far down there, which I guess he's trying to get comfortable because that's where he's going to wind up. 1-800-449-8686, Phil Henry Show.
Now, Phil Hendry, 1-800-449-8686.
Phil Hendry's show. Now, we are going to give you an update on what has been happening from a variety of sources that we and we alone have. Now, I'm looking at this, Janice. This is March 31st. Is the 31st today?
Yeah.
Okay, so this was last updated at 4:08 Greenwich Mean Time. That would mean like 8 a.m. Pacific. It says April, excuse me. All right, this is as of April 1st. So here in America, it's still March 31st, but we're giving you news now from around the world. A dramatic shift in battle lines around Baghdad. We have found out that the U.S. 101st Airborne Unit has broken through Iraqi defense lines and are fighting in the streets of Hindia, south of the capital. Rumbles of artillery fire heard in South Baghdad coming from these advancing U.S. troops. Now, I don't know if that's been reported yet. Has it, Janice? I don't think so. I haven't seen that. But we've got news that U.S. 101st Airborne Units have broken through the Iraqi defense lines and are fighting in the streets of Hindia, south of the capital. There are rumbles of artillery fire heard in the South Baghdad area coming from these advancing units. Other stories to pay attention to. Apparently, allegedly, our sources tell us that Iraq has opened the Euphrates-Tigris floodgates in the path of U.S. troops advancing on Baghdad. And this, I guess, is the pull it out at all stops, destroy the very resources of the country if you have to, even murder your own people, do whatever you can to make sure that Saddam is comfortable in his bunker. Even send women and children to their death at checkpoints. Colin Powell has warned Syria to stop backing Iraq in the second U.S. warning to Damascus in a week. The Secretary of State has said that Damascus takes responsibility for its choices and its consequences. The Tehran-backed Iraqi Shiite leaders tell the community not to rise up against Saddam or support the allies, but to wait to collect the spoils from the victor. Saddam is eyeing the end game. He's gathering his elite forces. Here is our special analysis of that. In a dawn raid on Monday, U.S. helicopters, tanks, and ground troops stormed Shatra, north of Nasiriyah, aiming for senior Iraqi officials directing guerrilla attacks, including Saddam's cousin, al-Hassan al-Majid. Palestinian Jihad Islamic leaders in Damascus announced the first blow for Saddam struck in Netanyah, a brigade of suicides in place in Baghdad. Iraq reports 4,000 Arab suicides arrived ready to die for Saddam. There's a constant Allied air missile raid on Baghdad, retargeting Iraqi Information Ministry and so on. So that's that. I think we've got you up to date. But the most important piece of news, I think, is the U.S. 101st Airborne has broken through the Iraqi defense lines, and they are fighting in the streets of Hindiyah, south of the capital. Also, that Iraq has opened the Euphrates-Tigris floodgates. This is a report that we're getting in the path of U.S. troops advancing on Baghdad. You know, when, and now the Palestinian Jihad, which is a terrorist organization that says it represents the Palestinian people, now they are sending suicide bombers to support Saddam Hussein. So what does that mean? What does that mean? There isn't anybody who fights for the freedom, for the dignity, and for the eventual Palestinian homeland that could possibly explain to me why they're sending people to support Saddam Hussein. I know the answer. I wonder if anybody else has the answer. I know what the answer is. The Palestinian people have no leadership, and they are not represented by anybody. There is a cadre of opportunists and carpetbaggers and thieves that call themselves the leaders of the Palestinian people who are running around the world committing murder so that they can gain for themselves. It has nothing to do with the Palestinian people. Nothing. And then finally, this question. Why shouldn't we answer violence with violence? Why is it wrong to answer violence with violence? After 9/11, I had to have these arguments with people. There were people even after 9/11 that didn't want us to attack Afghanistan. But for 50-plus years, this is how we've responded to terrorists. A guy blew up a cafe. Okay, let's go find him and put him in jail. All right. Guy hijacked an airplane. Find that guy, put him in jail. Even the Israelis, not going after the actual leadership of a terror organization. When somebody, for instance, the individuals that murdered the Israeli athletes at the 72 Olympics, when that kind of crime is committed, they send out their operatives after those individuals, but they're not really targeting the terror organization. We had hijackings. We had murders. We had kidnappings. We had every manner of terrorist attack, and generally our response would be this. Well, I guess we got to go find the people responsible and put them in jail. Or we would say, in the United Nations, of course, this is an indication that more needs to be done for the Palestinian peace process. So instead of taking a guy like Arafat and excluding him, instead of saying that because he's a terrorist he doesn't belong in the process,
again, I don't wear a wig. Only a stupid B-I-T-C-H like that would say that.
Well, all right, you know, the word slut you said on the job, but don't use these words on my show, okay?
Well, you know, you want me on your show or don't you?
I would like you on my show. I'd rather you not call her, you know, what you called her.
Well, she didn't know. She was guessing. But that doesn't have anything to do with anything. I fired her because she was talking about personal business.
All right, our number is 1-800-449-8686. And you'll forgive me, sir, but there's something a little out of place for your anger to be that angry just because she was talking.
You know, women think they know when a guy is wearing a hairpiece or a wig. I don't wear a wig. I don't wear a toupee. I'm not bald.
You have hair.
Yeah, I have hair. It's on my head right now. Don't call me bald. Are you bald?
I am bald, sir. I have no hair. I don't have a hairpiece.
See, once again, you lump me in with you. You're bald. You don't have a hairpiece. I have nothing to do with you. I'm not you. I'm me. I have a hairpiece. I'm not bald. And for that cow to say, you're a little off, and she says, I'm wearing a wig, she embarrassed me. She embarrassed me in front of my employees.
All right. I will tell you that I had a statement here, a Mrs. Mandy Rutherford.
Yeah, I know her, too. She's a cow, too.
All right, well.
See, she lied to the investigators from the California Labor Board.
All right, but she said.
I know what she said.
I have to repeat it to my listeners. Mrs. Rutherford said she witnessed the whole thing. She said that Mrs. Tipton was right.
She's a liar.
Sir, I have to be able to say this. She said Mrs. Tipton was right, that the hairpiece on your head had shifted so far over that one of your ears was completely covered and the other one completely exposed.
Yeah, she's a liar.
So that was not the case.
I'm not saying she's making it sound.
She said she could also see, and I'm not trying to embarrass you, sir.
By repeating this, you are.
I'm saying what she said to the California Labor Board. She said she could see a glue line.
Let me tell you something. You've never had your hair blow over. So in other words, you've never had your hair blow over to the side of your head.
As I said, I'm bald. My hair hasn't blown in my face in a few years, sir.
All right, well, I'm sorry to hear that because I'm not bald. I have hair. And I didn't fire her for commenting on my hairpiece. I fired her for her personal comments and her vicious, vicious assault on me. When you talk to your boss about personal matters, why doesn't she just proposition me? Why doesn't she just say, Mr. Green, would you like me to take you in the back and do you? Why doesn't she just say that?
Because she didn't say that, sir. She was making a comment on your appearance that perhaps, maybe, I don't know, she thought was helpful.
Helpful? In full view of everybody, hey, look, look at the wig. Look at your wig.
Well, she didn't yell it. You're the one that screamed, you effing slut.
Yes, because it was an assault. It had nothing to do with work.
I have Tucker on the line here. You're on the Phil Hendry Show with Robert Green of Fraser Foods and Phil Hendry. Go ahead, Tucker.
I can't find it very, very hard to believe that this gentleman is so sensitive that when someone makes a minor comment about him, he explodes and makes some of the most unbelievable comments that he has no way in the world of backing up about the lady.
Wait a minute, what did I say?
And those comments, those things that you have called her both on the air and to her personally, are far in excess of anything she ever mentioned about you. And you think that you haven't done anything wrong, and this lady is totally at fault.
Wait a minute. I said that
if you worked for me, sir, I'd have fired you immediately.
Fired me for what? She's commenting on my hairpiece.
She did it in a very quiet way.
Yes.
With a pencil.
Yes.
Where nobody, where she did not point, she didn't stand up and yell out to everyone, look at my boss, he's got whatever on. She did not do that.
All right, well,
she did it in a way to help you correct if your hairpiece was misaligned.
All right, let me ask you this. This will prove whether you're right or whether I'm right. Do you think I'm bald?
No, I don't.
Thank you. Okay, then maybe you've got a point.
Wait a minute. Why does that help your point?
Because at least he says I'm not bald.
Well, I'm saying you're bald.
The point is that it's you think it's okay for you to call someone every name under the book, but she can't help you out by saying, you know, what would you have done if she'd have pointed to your fly and your fly was down? Wouldn't you want her to do that if your fly was down?
So she can say, hey, look at that, your thing's hanging out for the world to see.
No, she didn't do that. But she didn't do that. If she had just said, boss, you know, your fly is down in a very unobtrusive manner, she would have been doing you a favor. She was doing you a favor in this way, and you went ballistic.
Wait a minute. She's using company time.
You don't hear what this man's saying. She's trying to do you a favor. You've got a hairpiece on that's so far over one side, it's over one ear, and the wig and the glue line is exposed. You gotta...
Look, you're intimating that I'm bald and I'm not.
Forget about whether you're bald. I think you're bald.
Buddy, if you were standing in front of me, I'd drop you. I would drop you.
You are bald. You don't have any hair, and you got a wig on.
I wear...
mentally.
You know something? I wear a hairpiece. I don't wear a wig. 4 hours of a very painful fitting. If you were in front of me right now, Mr. Hendry, I would drop you.
Yeah, well. Thank you, Tucker.
Thank you, sir.
Wait, is he... You're not letting him go, are you?
Well, sure.
I got more to say to that guy. That guy's lying. He's lying.
All right. 1-800-449-8. So what is he lying about? Talking about decent, common, decent, behavior around an employee. We're talking with Robert Green, the owner of Fraser Foods. He's being investigated by the Labor Board for firing a woman and calling her an effing slut in the process because she pointed out that his hairpiece was lopsided. And he said that he doesn't allow personal commentary on the job, but one thinks that there's a lot more to this than meets the eye. Our number is 1-800-449-8686, 1-800-449-8686. The woman in question, by the way, a Mrs. Tipton, is a mother of four. She has appealed this. He has countersued, saying that she defamed him by saying he wears a wig. 1-800-449-8686, Phil Hendry Show.
The Phil Hendry Show, 1-800-449-8686.
Phil Hendry Show is back. 1-800-449-8686.
I don't even know if I want to read this, but I guess I will. A car battery adjacent to a metal bed frame is evidence of Iraqi torturers' work. At least one of the bodies of the four American soldiers discovered in a shallow grave was brutalized and mutilated, according to Pentagon sources. The corpses were unearthed in the vicinity of this torture hospital at Nasiriyah, where U.S. Marines found evidence the Iraqis had operated a torture chamber. Military officials are now investigating whether there is any connection between the hospital and the fate of at least 12 members of a U.S. Army mechanical unit that disappeared last Sunday. President Bush, in his weekly radio address to the nation, said the latest horrors from Iraq illustrate how evil Saddam Hussein's regime is. Officials would not confirm whether the dead soldiers were members of the mechanical unit who had taken a wrong turn and were ambushed by Iraqi forces. You know, personally, I think people say, well, what are you going to do with the oil? What's America going to do with the oil? And, of course, again, there's a group of people who are begging us to take that oil, so it proves their point that it was a war for oil. Over the last few days, I've tried to explain how a war for oil, because I've heard people say a war for oil is bad, and it's just a war for oil, and it's just a war for money. And I was thinking, well, what's wrong with that? What's wrong with that? See, oil is a utility. And I don't care if you're the most anti-war person that ever walked, you need it. You can't live without it. You can't live without it. When a part of the world where a utility that we use, oil, is pumped out of the ground, when that part of the world is politically unstable and is anti-American, there comes a point when you have to make some decisions. And 9/11 was a pretty good excuse to probably do what we needed to do anyway. And that's put at least some semblance of stability back into a region. And by stability, you're right, I mean friendly to the U.S. You got that right, because that's how it works. It doesn't work like this. Well, if Korea gets to have nuclear weapons, and then we get to have nuclear weapons, then Iraq gets to have... No, it doesn't work like that. And it certainly doesn't work like that anymore. Not now, not in the 21st century. There are nations that get to tell other countries what to do. And there are countries that have a vital interest, special interest, economic interest, national interest in certain parts of the world. And the U.S. got a big one in the Middle East. And don't tell me that it's not our oil. When we're paying for it, when we help pull it out of the ground, and on top of everything else, the fact is, the guys that are selling us that oil are thieving from their own people anyway. They're stealing from their own people anyway. Those resources are not being stolen by anybody other than the people that lead the countries that the oil is in, or under, I should say. Saudi Arabia, they steal from their people. Iraq, they're stealing from their people down through the years. So when this war comes to an end, and somebody says, are we going to get any of that oil? I say, we should get it before the French. I think if anybody ought to get 40% of market, we ought to. I think if anybody ought to get contracts for rebuilding that country, we should. If anybody ought to have contracts for supplying military parts, we should. If anybody should have whatever contract Saddam was giving out to the French, we ought to get them now. Because the French, just like I said before this whole thing started, man, those guys have aced themselves completely out of this. Totally out of this. They got no place, no how, no way, nowhere. They are done. And now I see that they're trying to, scramble back a little bit with this. Well, of course, we hope the Americans win the war and, let bygones be bygones. We're really all just good friends and we didn't really mean it. And yeah, okay. See, as this goes along and as it gains in momentum and as it gains in success, this war in Iraq, so many people are being made to look bad and look stupid and look just plain wrong. So many people are made to look that they completely misread the landscape. And I'd say it again, that Condoleezza Rice, that's a woman that needs to get out on television more. That's a woman, that's the person we ought to be hearing from. Get Alexander Haig out of there. How does that guy get on Larry King all the time? Every time I flip the TV on, I'm looking at him. Colin Powell, nice guy, seen enough of him, get him out of there. You know, who else do they... Rumsfeld, get him out of there. Rumsfeld is a fine man, and he's a good planner and a good strategist. People don't like him. You want to get somebody who can actually articulate the impetus, the beginnings, the foundation, and the and where this war is going and why we're fighting it? That girl, Condoleezza Rice. I say girl with all due respect. She's educated. She's smart. She's got things to say. She has a complete understanding. She's got a grasp on the situation. She was on French television trying to explain it to those idiots. And I think she's the one that can send the message to whoever the hell it is we want to have the message sent to. 1-800-449-8686. Phil Hendry Show.
Phil Hendry. 1-800-449-8686. Show is back. 1-800-449-8686.
Here's an interview with Tariq Aziz. This guy is a minister of something. He's a deputy something or other with Iraq, and they were asking him about terrorists, recruiting terrorists. And a reporter for, I don't know, I think it was ABC News asked, you know they're going to say that you're recruiting terrorists. Aziz says, no, you know, the question of terrorists, when you fight an invader by whatever means available to you, you are not a terrorist, you are a hero. So he's basically proving my point that they would send women and children to their death. That's exactly what he's just said. They would send women and children to their death. But you're bringing these people from outside, you're finding, Aziz responds, from outside, from inside, these people are heroes. They're freedom fighters against invaders, against colonialists, against imperialists. They're freedom fighters and heroes, and we are proud of them. Where are you finding them? Are these people disgruntled, angry people? But the first one you said, but there will be more? And Aziz says, they are where they are. They are where they are. You see, they volunteer themselves to come to Iraq, and we welcome them. But the Iraqis are doing it also. The first one who did it was an Iraqi. He was not a foreigner. There will be others. Iraqis, Arabs, maybe Muslims. Yes, we welcome them. So the guy has just said, if you fight an invader by any means necessary, you're a hero. So if you send women and children into a checkpoint, knowing they're going to get gunned down by Marines, you're a hero. If you murder women and children, you're a hero. These guys, you know, the mask has slowly come off on everything that they've done. There's nothing more to argue, as I said. And that's why we will not take any more phone calls from people arguing about whether this is a just war or not, whether this is a right war. Of course it's right. Of course it's just. Of course it's the smart thing to do. Of course it was what we were forced into doing. The United States didn't want to go to war with Iraq. We were content to sit there in the United Nations and play that stupid game. And we were shuttling diplomats back and forth from the Middle East. And we were putting up with that guy Hussein, 12 years listening to his baloney. But when this came down, all bets were off. All right, 1-800-449-8686, Phil Hendry Show. Here is Steve. Hello, Steve.
Hello.
Yes, sir.
Hi, Phil. How are you?
Fine.
Good. Hey, listen to your show quite often, and normally in agreement with a lot of what you say. However, tonight you had spoke about the war being about a money war, an oil war. And, yeah, you're right. There's nothing wrong with stating that. However, the administration has led us to believe that this war is about weapons of mass destruction. And
It's about all of those things. Yeah, sure.
Right, right. But, you know, the problem is isn't so much the war being over oil. It's the reasons that we're going over there aren't being told to the American people. And I'm proud
yes,
of all
they are.
Of our troops.
Sure they are. Sure they are.
They're not coming out and saying that it's a war over oil.
Well, they're saying that American interests. American interests are threatened. You know, it's, forgive me, but I got to chuckle a little bit when I hear people say, I know what this war is about. I just wish they would tell me the truth. Okay, so if they told you the truth, what would that mean?
Well, it would mean nothing more than we have an honest administration at the realm versus people who are...
But that wouldn't change anything, would it?
No, it wouldn't change the outcome of it. I don't.
It wouldn't change the way you felt. So why even worry about it? Why even debate it? Hello?
Yeah, I'm listening.
Why even worry about it? Why even debate it then?
Well, because...
I mean, if it's not going to change how you feel, if it's not going to change what you're thinking, why debate the relative honesty or every little fact that the administration's telling us?
Well, because there's innocent people dying on both sides of it that I think we need to take that in consideration.
What's that got to do, though, with an honest administration?
Well, if it's all about oil and it's all about money, then why do we care about how many civilians are dying over there?
I thought you said you wanted the country to be honest.
I do want the country to be honest.
But it's not going to change your opinion of anything. So why even debate the issue of honesty?
Well, it would be nice to know the
real. It would be nice to know, but it's not going to change anything. You're going to still feel the way that you feel. I'm going to feel the way that I feel. Why would we even discuss whether the administration is honest about anything?
Because then we would have an honest understanding of why we're over there. That's why.
I already know why we're over there.
Well,
I know why we're over there. Yeah, you mean you don't?
You do. I have an understanding of it.
Oh, so I see. So you and I are the only two smart guys in the world. Is that it?
No, not at all. I mean, I'm not saying that at all.
Well, then why even get into a silly debate over whether the administration is being honest? I don't think that this administration has been dishonest at all, Steve. The administration said that vital American interests are at stake in that part of the world. We are also trying to, first of all, it's a war of self-defense, given the fact that this guy could use these weapons of mass destruction against us.
Right.
It's a war against terrorism because the man supports and funds terrorist organizations. And it avenges what happened on 9/11. It sends a very clear message that we are no longer reactive, we're proactive.
Okay.
All right, pal?
I see your point.
All right, man. Thanks for calling.
Hey, appreciate it.
Okay, buddy. Bye. 1-800-449-8686, the number on the Phil Henry Show. Let's go over to Chris. Hello, Chris. You're on the Phil Henry Show.
Hey, what's going on, Phil?
How you doing?
Not too bad. One issue that I never really heard brought up too much, I thought would be interesting to talk about, is the money issue. Like, I definitely agree with everything you're talking about, on why it's a just war and all that. But, I mean, how are we paying for the war? Like, I understand that Bush is passing all these bills to have the war funded, but, I mean, where does that come from exactly?
Comes from an appropriations bill that is passed by the Congress and signed by the president.
Right, I get that, but I mean on the back end, like where does...
You mean like on the balance sheet? It's deficit spending, I guess.
Yeah.
Because I think we've run through our surplus. So we're deficit spending. It's not unheard of. We did it all through the 80s.
Right, yeah, I definitely understand.
Yeah.
Well, I definitely agree with everything you're saying. The other thing is I think that one thing a lot of people don't understand with the war is that we don't know a lot of what the government knows about what goes on, you know, behind the doors in Iraq. And a long time ago, before we even started talking about when we were going in and before the resolution 1441 was passed, there were a couple of press conferences on TV, you know, illustrating exactly what is going on behind the doors in Iraq. And it's funny because right after that happened, you know, the approval for a potential war on all the polls on TV went through the roof. And then once it started fading in the minds of Americans, exactly all the crap that was going on in Iraq, everyone started, you know, talking about how it may not be so just. And it's such a media game with how...
I'm not sure I understood what you were saying, that when they had a report on all the stuff that was going on behind the doors in Iraq, people were in favor of the war or against it?
Yeah, well, I can't remember exactly when it was, but a while back when Colin Powell and Bush went on TV and they started talking about the torture and all of the stuff that's going on.
Uh-huh.
The day after, there were a lot of CNN polls that were talking about how people were just all for the war and how they thought that the decision to go to war would be, you know, it had high approval at the time. And since then, it's kind of trailed off, and it's just funny because since then, there really hasn't been another another real media frenzy on all the atrocities that are going on in Iraq that we, you know, that we don't hear about every day.
Well, you know, look, you're seeing it every day. You're looking at people running from Basra who are being shot at by their own troops. It's no longer, people can no longer hide from what this guy's about. You saw these women and children gunned down at a checkpoint. I have no doubt in my mind that they were that was a suicide mission. They took the lives of children with them. You just heard Tariq Aziz quoted as saying, anything in the name of defending your country makes you a hero, and I guess that means murdering children. I don't think there's anything. The mask is off of Iraq. Now, personally, just for me, I don't see this as a war to free the Iraqi people. I've never seen that. It's a byproduct. For me, this was a war to get rid of a terrorist. For me, this is a war to stabilize an area of the world that is vital to American interest, and we have a right to go into this area because we were victimized, attacked, whatever you want to call it, by these terrorists. And as far as the freeing the Iraqi people go, it's a byproduct, but I don't see it as the primary mission.
Yeah, well, there's a lot of different reasons that make this a just war. It's just funny to watch people feed off from the small things that really don't matter in the big picture, just to try and justify the fact that they hate Bush. And
I understand. I understand you, buddy. Thanks for calling.
Hey, no problem.
All right, man. See you later, Chris.
Bye.
1-800-449-8686, The Phil Hendry Show. People talk about honesty in government. The government can't always be honest. It's impossible. It's impossible. If we're honest about everything that we do, well, for instance, if Geraldo Rivera gets to report everything that the Pentagon says, if the Pentagon says everything that they know, people die. People die. The fact of the matter is, this war with Iraq, nobody's been dishonest about it. Everyone has come right out and said what it's about. That it is a war to protect American interest, and that it is a war to get rid of a terrorist who funds and trains and sponsors animals like the ones that murdered 3,000 on 9/11. There's no big secret there, I don't think. Here is Monica. Monica, hi. You're on the Phil Hendry Show.
Hi.
Hi.
Well, I was just calling because I listened to your comments that you were making to the gentleman that called before last, and I kind of disagree with what you're saying. I understand that you're saying that, the government is not hiding what the war is about, but if they're not coming out and telling you straightforward, okay, this is what it's about, then there's a problem, because you're saying you don't think that it's going to change our opinion or change the way we think about it.
What do you think the war is about?
Well, I think it's about all those things that you're talking about.
Like what?
The oil. I think it's about getting rid of weapons of mass destruction. I think it's about getting rid of a tyrant that's over there that's abusing the people in that country.
And so if we're fighting this war and it's about those things that you believe it's about, what difference does it make what the government tells you?
It doesn't matter what it's about. It matters if we have an honest administration. I think if we elect officials to speak for our country as a nation, and they're supposed to be the voice of us, of the people, whether or not what it's about, it needs to be put in the open, brought to light.
Well,
I think it's important that you have an honest administration. Look at the Clinton administration and what went on. I mean, you have to have, if you're going to have someone who's, you know...
No. I thought you were just talking about, you're talking about this war. I thought you were talking about this war. How's the government... Has the government lied to you?
It's about having someone that's speaking for you and for the voice of the American people. They have to be honest.
Well, I don't really know what you mean by honest. I thought you guys were talking about the war against or in Iraq and the honesty of the administration with regard to that. That's what I thought you guys were talking about.
Well, that's what I think as the man who called. I mean, just because we know...
He was talking about the war, and I said...
Right.
I said, he didn't seem to believe in the war, and I said, so what difference does it make whether the administration's honest with you or not? You still ain't going to believe in it. So, it's like my brother-in-law, dumbass, he says the same thing. He says, I wish they'd just be honest. It wouldn't change my opinion, but I wish they'd just be honest. I'm thinking, well, what's the point of them being honest with you, man? That's like saying, tell me the truth, even though I won't agree with it. What's that mean? Tell me the truth, even...
I think it's the principle of it. I mean, especially, I just don't. If you're going to do it for certain reasons, and we don't have a choice as far as we elected these representatives to speak for us, to be our voice, And depending on whatever they vote and whatever they say, whether Congress passes it or not, we still, after that, you know, well, we can change that come next election. But for now, yeah, there's a need to be honest, whether or not we agree with it or not. They still need to be honest about it.
I don't think, bottom line is, I don't think the administration's been dishonest about this war at all. I don't think they've been dishonest at all.
Well, I don't think they've been dishonest either, but my point was only that you had said, what does it matter if they're honest or not? And mine
only
was,
because
my
only because
just on that comment.
I understand, but only because I said that. Yes, only because that guy said it doesn't matter what they say anyway. I'm still not going to agree with them. So my thinking was, why even have them be honest with you? But Monica, thank you. I understand your point. I appreciate your call. 1-800-449-8686. That was a whole lot of goofy conversation, wasn't it? I think we both got our thing said, right? I don't know. Janice is monitoring that computer screen like she's an air traffic controller there. She's looking at all the pretty pictures. All right, our number is 1-800-449-8686, The Phil Henry Show.
Phil Henry Show, 1-800-449-8686.
Phil Henry Show is back. 1-800-449-8686.
UK soldiers sent home from Iraq for refusing to fight. Two British soldiers have been sent home from the Gulf for refusing to fight in a war involving the deaths of civilians. The soldiers were from the 16th Air Assault Brigade and blah, 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 blah. All right. You know, World War II had those kinds of guys, too. And, in fact, there was a famous the Private Eddie Slovak story. Anybody know that story? He refused to fight. I think he was court-martialed for, and he was shot. He's the last American soldier to be executed for, I think it was cowardice. I believe it was cowardice. I could be wrong. And then there's the famous story of George Patton, who went into the hospital, General Patton, and there was a guy sitting there crying, and he asked him what was wrong, and apparently he was a case of battle fatigue, and Patton called him a coward and slapped him across the face. And he had to apologize. 1-800-449-8686. Battle fatigue is not cowardice. Battle fatigue is a real condition, and it is, today we call it post-traumatic stress syndrome. In World War II, it was called battle fatigue. In World War I, it was called shell shock. And today, it's, as we know it to be, a post-traumatic stress syndrome, which I suppose is much more clinical and descriptive, but it happens to you after the fact. Here is, Brad. Hello, Brad. You're on the Phil Henry Show.
Hey, Phil. How's it going?
Fine. How are you?
Good. I want to first say that I'm in total agreement with your opinion on the war in Iraq. I feel like it's totally just. But as to the last couple of callers that were talking about the honesty issue, really, I think the issue is that we've got a lot of people that are skeptical about this administration from the get-go, and that they're using this as their measuring tool or their tape measure as to whether they're going to be able to approve of the administration's decisions in the future.
Uh-huh.
And to that degree, I feel like the honesty of the administration is paramount. I mean, they have to be honest with us. Because if for example, this happens 2 or 3 years down the road, we want all the support of the American citizens.
I think when you're a politician, you're like a salesman.
Yeah.
Do you, frankly, I don't want the government to be totally honest with me. For instance, in matters of military. In military matters, do I need to know exactly where all of the Marines are and what time they're going to launch the battle, as we said early in the show? Of course not. I don't want to know that. It's going to compromise the lives of a lot of people. And I got to tell you, if President Bush said, we're going to war in Iraq because we need to avenge and we need to neutralize a terror-sponsoring regime, mm-hmm. as well as stabilize the oil supply to this country... you would have had a lot of people knee-jerk saying, no, then that's a wrong reason to go to war, you know?
Yeah, I understand. I totally see that point, too. But let me ask you this. How much of that do you feel like is really in support of the oil anyway? Isn't only 8% of our oil consumption come from Middle East?
Only 8% of our oil does come from from Iraq, Brad. Or not Iraq, but a very small percentage comes from Iraq. But in the future... As this country tries to stabilize its energy supply and hopefully get its ass off of oil in the Middle East forever, Iraq is an important place to stabilize.
1-800-449-8686, Phil Henry Show.
Phil Henry Show, 1-800-449-8686.